Hi, I'm Dave Sobel from the Business of Tech podcast, here with another perspective. Today, why capital matters and how it changes markets, and why you in technology services should care. Have you heard the story of the pizzeria owner who made money buying his own pizzas from DoorDash? Reported in the newsletter The Margins, this story starts with the tactics of DoorDash to bully restaurants into signing up customers. The company creates delivery options on restaurants' Google listing, and then the complaints come in from customers they can't get delivery. In this case, however, DoorDash incorrectly priced the pizza. A $24 pizza was listed as $16 by DoorDash. And in true Wall Street trader fashion, they quickly realized what they could do. If someone could pay DoorDash $16 a pizza, and DoorDash would pay the restaurant $24 a pizza, the owner could just all day long order from himself, clearing $8 profit per pizza. They did it, and it worked. Multiple times. Even trying just ordering pizza dough for pure profit. Ranjan Roy, the author of The Margins piece, observes that DoorDash lost $450 million, generating $900 million in revenue. Delivery was working just fine before DoorDash and companies like it came in with this capital. Quoting Roy in the piece, "You have insanely large pools of capital, creating an incredibly inefficient, money-losing business model," he writes. "It's used to subsidize an untenable customer expectation. You leverage a broken workforce to minimize your genuine labor expenses. The companies unload their capital cannons on customer acquisition, while the Uber Grubhub news reminds us the only viable endgame is a promise of monopoly concentration and increased prices. The more I learn about food delivery platforms as they exist today, I wonder if we've managed to watch an entire industry evolve artificially and incorrectly." End quote. The lesson here is that capital can change the entire direction of an industry, particularly disproportionate amounts of capital. In this case, the drive to make money has been entirely redirected by these players to drive instead to scale. Now, let's look at what's happening in the technology services space, particularly tools vendors focused on managed services. When we look at the history of companies here, you have a number of founder-driven companies which are designed to solve a problem and build a traditional business. Austin McCord of Datto, Arnie Bellini of ConnectWise, Gavin Garbutt of Enable, Doug Wilson at Houndog, Peter Sanderford at Level Platforms, all are founders that identified a problem, built something, and went forth to solve a problem and generate revenue doing so. Over time, each sold. Houndog in 2009, Enable and Level Platforms in 2013, then Houndog again in 2016, Datto taking investment in 2015 and selling in 2017, and ConnectWise in 2019, all eventually ending up in the hands of private equity firms rather than their founder owners. Each time, there is a press release. The founder will say something along the lines of, "This will provide a whole new set of capabilities that accelerate our growth." And the acquirer says something like, "This will take the company to a whole new level." Seriously, go look at the press releases. Looking back on each, it's like a set of Mad Libs. You can just replace the nouns for the company names and the founders, but they all read identically. At their core, the promise is, we will move faster, deliver more, and do more with this money. And none of it is actually true. You can tell I've spent a lot of time reading press releases lately, because while all of these new companies have done plenty in terms of issuing releases, more often than anything, they're discussing who their leadership is or how much money they've made, not their development of anything new or innovative, as we were promised. There's a reason for that. Just like in the food delivery example, private equity money isn't here to build something and solve a problem. Private equity money has changed the game. A PE investor comes in with one design: to take a company, accelerate its revenue growth, make it bigger, and sell it. 20% growth becomes a mantra, and there are three basic levers to pull here. Lever one is sell more. You'll often see a lot of investments in sales and marketing teams because selling more is good for increased revenue growth. You can also raise prices, which, shocking, they do. Of course, it's hard to get new customers, so thus the second. The second lever is to acquire new things to sell to your existing customer base. This lever is pulled because it's really hard to get 20% growth on large sales numbers. And the easiest way to do it is to buy something and then sell that new thing to your existing customers. As you know, it's far easier to sell to an existing customer than a new one. Finally, you make it leaner. You cut expenses by reducing headcount and anything risky. You know what costs more and is risky? R&D. Building something new is hard, and it gets in the way of driving profitability. It's way easier to just go buy things and roll that in than it is to build something. Thus, you don't see a lot of building of new things. Now, we were promised that every single time. Here's the quotes. "This merger marks a natural step in our evolution as we continue to bring more managed service offerings to the channel." Or, "This unique combination of talent with a track record of success marks a new chapter that will make an even bigger on our managed services provider partners by delivering an unprecedented set of capabilities for them to serve millions of small businesses in the future." Or, "Our combined teams will utilize our deep domain experience and industry-leading data analytics capabilities to deliver breakthrough innovations to our customer base of the world's leading MSPs." Or, "We will continue to invest in our partner community and provide the solutions they need to deliver technology as a service to the world." "How about this will allow us to accelerate growth and provide tremendous long-term value to managed services providers and the small businesses that they serve." I didn't put any names on these because they're all the same. They're actually entirely interchangeable. I could put one quote into the other's press release and you would know. These are five distinct quotes taken from press releases for acquisitions I'd mentioned before. And you can't tell the difference. In the press releases, I was promised a flying car. Where is my flying car? Let me be clear. I don't blame a single one of these founders for selling and taking their windfalls. I hope they are enjoying new lives, houses, trips, and a fantastic lives. They worked hard. They built something. They added real value. But you know what else? They're all gone. The problem is that this change is not just business as usual. Here's why I think all this private equity money is dangerous for solution providers. 93% of all solution providers are doing less than $5 million in revenue. When their primary vendors were similar to them, founder-driven, and looked a lot more like small businesses than big ones, they were much more in alignment. What was good for the provider was good for the vendor, and vice versa. But that script is broken now. The market doesn't change. Technology isn't changing. New versions of the same product does not drive the market forward. These companies position themselves as core to the model. But where are they innovating? Are they helping you with cloud, with Chromebooks, virtual desktop infrastructures, Azure, AWS, Google Cloud? Some are still struggling with virtualization, a technology I wrote a book about more than a decade ago. This is dangerous. Solution providers, who as a reminder are less than $5 million in revenue in general, are not the ones who are going to be investing significantly in new R&D. They certainly aren't creating new products. They're creating new service bundles, but do require the creation of new technologies to do that. And they aren't going to get that from companies driven by private equity. The money has messed up the dynamics of the market. Now, based on this situation, what are my recommendations? First, I'd reevaluate your relationship with these vendors. If you're riding the sugar high from the relationship you have from them, make sure you're not living in the past. They have financial goals to meet. That's what matters. Those personal relationships with the founders are long gone. That rep at any level could be gone in a second. You need to evaluate your interactions purely based on the value they provide now, not previously. Sweat equity isn't worth anything. Second, ensure you aren't locked into their ecosystem in a way that jeopardizes your business. Recently heard of a provider be dismissive of selling a Chromebook solution because they don't make any money off of it and can't manage it. If services dollars are your core, you can make services money off any technology, regardless. your tools budget is way lower than your labor budget, and that labor matters so much more. Thus, two measurements. What would be the impact if they raised prices with no additional value, and what would be the impact if you needed to switch? You may think retraining is a high cost, but the lifetime cost of tools is far higher. An increase in cost quickly offsets that retraining cost. I say this because you have additional needs. The future of the industry does not look like the past. And right now, some of these vendors look like relics of the past, with what looks more like maintenance on their product lines than investment. They're not going to bring you anything new, and you need to continue to innovate. Going deeper into their ecosystem is not going to help you there. If I was Microsoft, I could wipe them out with a few smart investments. This is the threat you need to think about. A vendor who becomes interested in the space at that size and scale is quite close. Thus, my final recommendation is a hard analysis of the reality of change. You think it's really hard, but is it? A new eager upstart competitor without the legacy backlog can come into your space. Think about the MSP you would build if you were starting. Mine would be super lightweight and wouldn't have anything to do with the legacy toolkits. Having launched my own new business in the past 12 months, the tools to start up a business are trivially simple to get up and running. The market is very different now, particularly if you've had a tool for a long time. Now, if you're a vendor related to this space, I'm issuing new recommendations. Don't worry about these ecosystems. Integration used to be really important, but it's actually a lot less so now because it's difficult and it takes away from your agility. You're devoting precious development resources to something, in my mind, that's becoming less valuable. You're more likely to be bought by them than to need a real integration. And since you need to do it four times to integrate into each ecosystem, don't waste your time. Instead, find a compelling differentiator so the providers need you no matter what. If you're driving revenue, that's the important piece. If you're nervous about that strategy, then do one thing. Make billing easy. Make it really easy to put your usage numbers onto a provider's bill. If you solve just that, everything else can be addressed. The technical integrations are really nice to haves. The single pane of glass is marketing, not reality. So if you make billing work, you're solving the biggest pain point. Now, some final thoughts for those solution providers and technology services companies. Do not be afraid of these companies. I've spoken to too many providers who think their value goes away if they lose their toolkits or that they need these companies. You don't. Your customer doesn't even know which tools you use. And remember, you're the customer. They call you partner because they want you to feel that way, but you're the customer. You pay them and they have to deliver. If they don't deliver, move on. You have the power in this relationship and you should leverage it. Thanks for listening to this bonus episode. I will talk to you with a regular episode tomorrow.